Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good afternoon and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Wanjiro in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Oli Tangen Jr. with what's trending on social media on the continent and around the world.
In today's program, South African President Jacob Zuma survives a motion of no confidence from his own African National Congress.
We are stuck with an incredibly divided African National Congress leadership. And of course, that is going to translate into the state. And it's going to be really interesting to see how President Zuma is going to hold on to what little power he has left.
The World Health Organization releases new guidelines on HIV self-testing.
It's very important that we find means of helping people to know their HIV status, because the sooner we can get people to know their status, the sooner they can get into treatment.
And we will be discussing the plane crash in Colombia that killed an entire football team from Brazil.
But first, let's find out what's been happening around the globe.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. Brazil has declared 3 days of mourning after a charter plane carrying a football team crashed into the mountains in Colombia late on Monday, killing 75 people. There were 6 survivors. The British Aerospace 146 short-haul plane, operated by the charter airline Lamia, declared an emergency and lost radar contact because of an electrical failure just before 10 p.m. local time. The plane was carrying members of Chapecoense Real, a Brazilian football club which was to have played in the Copa Sudamericana finals tomorrow against Atlético Nacional of Colombia. In South Africa, the Secretary General of the ruling African National Congress, Gwede Mantashe, has said the party's National Executive Committee had debated a call over the weekend for President Jacob Zuma to resign, but had refrained from backing the motion.
The following group was honest and candid and termed difficult discussion. The ANC did not support the call for the president to step down.
The move to oust Zuma, involving at least 4 ministers, was seen as the gravest threat to his leadership since he became president in 2009. The Syrian government offensive to recapture Aleppo is raising international concern, with the United Nations saying nearly 16,000 people had fled the assault and more could follow. France has called for an immediate Security Council session to discuss the fighting. East Aleppo has been under government siege for more than 4 months, but in recent days, a third of it has been recaptured by government troops, prompting an exodus of terrified civilians. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. In Brussels, Jeroen Dijsselbloem, who heads the group of 19 nations which use the euro currency, has told European lawmakers he believed that Brexit, Britain's departure from the European Union, was going to be a tough ride for the British economy. Dijsselbloem said London could not be allowed to remain the EU's financial capital after Britain's divorce from the EU.
We can't allow the financial service centre for Europe and the Eurozone to be outside Europe and the Eurozone and to go its own way in terms of rules and regulations, requirements, etc. Simply, we can't allow that to happen.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel said she was confident that EU member states would forge a common strategy in Brexit talks with London instead of seeking bilateral deals. 30 years after one of the worst nuclear disasters of all time, a giant steel cover has been moved into place over the stricken reactor at Chernobyl in the Ukraine. The purpose of the structure is to prevent deadly radiation from escaping into the environment for the next 100 years. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You're listening to Africa Link. The decision of the ruling African National Congress in South Africa not to ditch Jacob Zuma as president of the country has raised questions about whether this would be in the interest of the party and the country. Zuma survived a motion of no confidence at an extended meeting of the National Executive Council of the party outside Pretoria on Monday night. In a press conference on Tuesday, the ANC Secretary General stated that there was no vote against Zuma and the NEC had decided to work for unity within the organization.
NEC of the ANC has never voted on any issue. Members of the ANC of the NEC persuade one another to a point of consensus on every difficult, however difficult it can be. And so following robust, honest and candid and damn difficult discussion, the NEC did not support the call for the president to step down. The reality of the matter is that this issue was debated openly, robustly, and as we said, sometimes very difficult for the members themselves.
That was ANC Secretary General Gwede Mantashe. Supri Govinda now brings us more on the story.
At its National Executive Council meeting, party officials expressed the view that Zuma should remain president, despite strong efforts by a number of cabinet ministers and other senior officials that Zuma should be forced to resign. While some ANC members and alliance partners have already stated that they would prefer Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa to take over, there are others who are backing Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, the current chairperson of the African Union and the former wife of Zuma, for the top position. Independent political analyst Dr. Beki Ngomozulu told me that the party had no other alternative but to hold on to Zuma until the party's elective conference in December next year, when a new leader would be elected.
Basically, it's a balancing game whereby, first of all, they had to look at the interests of the party and then, of course, the interests of the country, let alone they had to consider their own personal interests.
Dr. Ngomozulu is of the view that the party wanted to avoid further divisions within the party, a situation that emerged when former President Thabo Mbeki was sacked in 2008 and again when former firebrand ANC Youth League leader Julius Malema was booted out of the party just before the general elections in 2014.
ANC will then have to look at all the factors and then decide which one will be a better option, even though there is no option that is problem-free. So whatever position they arrive at will have its own problems, but then they will have to wait and see which one has the potential to then assist the ANC in terms of preparing itself firstly for the elective conference and then secondly for the 2019 elections.
President Zuma has been rocked by several scandals, the latest being the so-called state capture, which alleges that the 74-year-old leader allowed the wealthy Gupta businessmen to have undue influence on the presidency. Zuma and the Guptas both reject the accusations. Karima Brown, another political scientist, describes Jacob Zuma's survival as yet another miracle by a wily politician. She warns, though, that the ANC is fractured, as was evident during the discussions on Monday between anti- and pro-Zuma factions.
We are stuck with an incredibly divided African National Congress leadership, and of course that is going to translate into the state, and it's going to be really interesting to see how President Zuma is going to hold on to what little power he has left.
Supri Govinda filed that report. So, Ole, it seems like Zuma is a survivor.
Yes, he is. And there have been many protests against the president. People started demanding he step down with the Zuma must fall protest last year, followed by the fees must fall protest in September.
Oh, was social media animated after today's decision?
Yeah, it sure was. And one of the main social media portals that was very open about this decision was MyANC, which is an official account for the party. And they said that following robust, honest and candid and at times difficult discussions, the ANC did not support the call for the president to step down.
And what else have people been saying online?
Well, in a lot of Twitter users in South Africa are reacting, including Chela Mokentel. And he said that the decision by presenting reacted to the decision by presenting a prayer to the ANC. He said, please don't remove Zuma so that we can bury ANC come 2019. Amen. Obviously, referring to the next elections in South Africa. And Peter Helfrich from Cape Town said simply that ANC chooses Zuma over South Africa once again.
So another day and another win by President Zuma.
It looks like that.
Thanks, Ole. Ahead of the World AIDS Day, the World Health Organization, WHO, has released new guidelines on HIV self-testing to improve access to and uptake of HIV diagnosis. The report states that more than 18 million people living with HIV have access to treatment, but a similar number are still unable to access this treatment, and the majority lack diagnosis and consequently are missing out. So how could self-testing improve the fight against HIV? A question I put to Gregory Hertel, WHO spokesman.
We believe, as you say, approximately 14 million people do not know their HIV status. So it's very important that we find means of helping people to know their HIV status, because the sooner we can get people to know their status, the sooner they can get into treatment, and that gives them better chances of surviving, and it also helps protect partners and other, well, sexual partners.
So how reliable are the results from the self-testing?
Well, the self-testing, for example, they're pretty reliable, but we always recommend that if using one of the two different types of self-tests, you get a positive result, then you go to a clinic, one, to get it confirmed, but two, the clinic will then be able to support you in any further steps and treatment and support that you might need.
So are there guidelines telling people what to do when they test positive, like if it's going to a clinic or where to report?
Well, okay, every country is different. But certainly what we need to do is get people into the system, so to speak. So be it a clinic, be it whoever is the responsible organization or system within a country or a province or a locality that deals with AIDS treatment and support.
How accessible are the self-tests?
The tests are not that accessible for the moment. So what we are trying to do by emphasizing these self-tests on World AIDS Day this year is recommending to policymakers, to government officials, to ministries of health, to anyone and everyone who's involved in the AIDS field, that this is something that they should seriously consider incorporating as another tool in their arsenal of things to help people control and live with their AIDS status.
Could you tell us of where the tests have worked and how this has been so far?
Yeah, so certainly the tests have been used most in Europe, as far as we know. But there are also pilot projects which have used the tests in Africa. And the all indications, both in Africa and in Europe, are that allowing or affording people the opportunity to self-test in the privacy of their own home is a big support in helping people to come forward and to know their status.
Are there any dangers of false positives?
There might be, and that's also then consequently why we ask for someone to go to do a confirmatory test in the relevant HIV clinic or support organization if one of these self-tests does test positive.
I was speaking to Gregory Hertel, WHO spokesman. Ole, social media has been mourning the tragic plane crash in Colombia. What have people been saying about it?
That's right. I mean, many, many teams and football players and football teams are offering their condolences to the friends, families and fans of Chapecoense Real, the Brazilian team. And Liverpool FC wrote that our thoughts are with everyone at Chapecoense and all those affected by the tragedy in Colombia. In Germany, Wolfsburg said our thoughts are with the victims and families of the tragic airplane crash in Colombia. And German national team and Bayern Munich player Thomas Müller wrote, "What a tragedy. My thoughts and sympathy are with the victims and families."
It's truly a sad day for football fans all over the world. You're listening to Africa Link here on DW in Bonn, Germany. Coming up here on Africa Link, vote buying is rampant in Ghana ahead of December 7 elections.
It's for sale right now. So I'm looking for someone to buy it. Because after voting, you will not see these politicians anywhere.
And we will be discussing the release of journalist Joy Doreen Bira in Uganda.
But first, we begin in Ghana. Vote buying is a constant political problem in the country in any election year. As the elections draw closer, some Ghanaians are demanding cash from politicians before casting their votes for them. It is a time to harvest, as some people like to put it. From Tamale in Ghana, Maxwell Tsuk sent us this report.
I will sell it if I get anyone to buy it. Honestly, it's for sale right now. So I'm looking for someone to buy it. Because after voting, you will not see these politicians anywhere.
I'll sell my vote. It's 1,000 Ghana cedis. Because I don't believe anybody who become a president or whatever. So I'm selling my vote. It's really hot. It's for sale. 1,000 Ghana pay.
These Ghanaians who spoke to me didn't hide the fact that they were offering their votes for sale like commodities. In Ghana, it is assumed that the highest bidder get the highest vote. But political scientist Paul Osei-Kufuor, who works with the Center for Democratic Development, CDD in Tamale, says such a notion is a slap in the face to the country's governance system.
Why should you sell your vote? Or why should you allow your vote to be bought? It's also an affront to democracy. That means people's choices, the type of political leaders you may elect may not reflect the genuine interests and choices of citizens.
A lot of Ghanaians are cashing in on this year's election campaign season. Just a couple of days ago, money and wax prints were distributed to some Tamale residents to woo votes by a politician. Nabari Abdullahi is an influential person in Tamale. He explains why people sell votes.
The reason why they are doing that is that the leaders promised them that we will do this for you, and yet they didn't. So if you come to him again, he will also tell you that if you don't give me money, I won't do this for you.
Under Ghana's public representation law, it is an offense to offer material things, promises and inducements in respect to one's quest for public office. I will not sell my vote has become a trending issue in Ghana. It is a campaign to promote civic consciousness and democratic rights among citizens. Paul Osei-Kufuor, lead member of this campaign, tells me it is not right to sell or buy a vote.
Election is a tool for accountability. And if in doing so, the system is corrupted and is not genuine, it undermines the legitimacy of people who may even be elected into political office.
Ghanaians have been compromising their votes since the beginning of the Fourth Republic in 1992. However, there are registered voters who refuse to sell their votes. One of them is Nuruddin Osman. He says he will cast his vote on December 7 to the candidates that appeal to him with ideas.
I will cast my votes follow on the developments and the promises the person is making, which will help the nation to move forward.
Maxwell Tsuk filed that report.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja, Africa Link's correspondents bring Africa stories to you.
You're listening to Africa Link. Still to come, a headhunter is on a mission to end job discrimination in France, which is costing the country tens of billions of euros.
Africa on the move.
Innovate, connect, accelerate. Those three words were the key points that brought dozens of young African tech entrepreneurs to Berlin. The event, dubbed AfroLink, was a chance for the tech-savvy youth to share and exchange ideas on how technology is impacting Africa. Crispin Mokideo was there and filed this report.
Imagine being able to call or internet chat with a doctor who answer questions and prescribe medication if needed to your pharmacy. No waiting in line or filling out insurance paperwork.
An advert showing how technology is changing lives in Africa is being projected at a large screen as the audience sits in silence. I am inside the Microsoft Atrium in Berlin, where a conference to bring together young African entrepreneurs is taking place. Stefan Zelazny is CIO of Mobisol, a startup which distributes solar energy in sub-Saharan Africa. He explains how the project, which also allows customers to pay via mobile money, is impacting lives.
Rural areas of Africa, they're beautiful, but from 6 to 6 at night, it's dark and there's nothing. So enhancing these people, empowering these people, giving them electricity very simply, changes their life extremely.
Rwanda, which recently launched a drone program which can transport medical supplies to hard-to-reach areas, was lauded as an example of how simple startups are able to improve the lives of people. The organizer of the conference, Moses Akwa, a Ghanaian-born software engineer based in Berlin, told me despite the infrastructural gap between Europe and Africa, Europe can learn a thing or two from the continent's innovations.
In Africa, just based on appropriate tools and appropriate technologies like WhatsApp, Skype, Facebook Messenger, people are now able to talk to their doctor, chat with their doctor from a rural area. Germany can learn this. I mean, I have friends who have to literally queue for months just to be able to meet a doctor.
Beatrice Ola, originally from Uganda, is founder of Appia Production, a startup which helped bring the African print to Germany. She also started Africa Fashion Now, an online platform where designers, fashion players and opinion leaders can meet. She says in terms of fashion, Africa's star can only shine brighter.
There's a booming creative scene. The middle class in Africa is rapidly increasing. Africa has the youngest population in the world. And it's time now to really connect. And we are kind of bridge between Europe and Africa.
But to cross that bridge, African entrepreneurs still have to face several obstacles. One of them is obviously the much-needed capital, as Steve Odhiambo, founder of Ukowapi, a mobile-based solution startup that specializes in location-based services, explains.
In the first maybe 6 to 12 months of our company, we were not making revenue in that sense. So that means you need 12 to 18 months of runway, which is hard working capital, to be able to survive.
As always, no meeting of Africans, whether politicians or tech-savvy young entrepreneurs, ends without music. And what better way to take in all the data shared during the conference than by listening to some djembe drumming?
A report by Crispin Mwakideu.
Focus Europe.
Job discrimination is costing France tens of billions of euros each year. That's according to a government study that adds an economic argument to a push for more diversity in the workplace. Activists have long complained the French motto of liberty, equality, and fraternity is not necessarily reflected in hiring practices. But from Paris, Lisa Bryant reports on one headhunter that's on a mission for change.
Rencontrer des professionnels qui travaillent dans ce secteur-là, posez-leur toutes les questions.
Making the grade for their next job interview, the four women at this workshop are learning how to promote their experience and skills with confidence. They all have master's degrees, but that's not enough to get hired these days, not when French unemployment is about 10%. They're up against other challenges, applications that may go unanswered, maybe because of their last names or postal addresses. The workshop is run by recruitment agency Mosaic RH, which seeks talent from France's rough, ethnically mixed suburbs. Estelle Barthélémy is Mosaic's deputy director. She actually grew up in Villiers-le-Bel, one of the infamous crime-ridden banlieues outside Paris. But French suburbs offer much more than negative stereotypes.
2% of people who are living in this kind of area could make some troubles, but 98% of people are working, are looking for a better life, and could be really an advantage for a country.
France has strongly egalitarian principles, even banning official statistics based on race or religion. But studies show another reality. Blacks, Muslims, and Jews, for example, have a harder time getting hired than other job seekers. A recent study shows diversity brings another benefit. Authored by government think tank France Stratégie, it finds France's economy could grow between 80 to 310 billion euros, or up to 14% of its GDP, by ending workplace discrimination. For 25-year-old Fatou Khan, whose parents come from Senegal, the workshop is empowering.
People believe in ourselves, and you're like, okay, so I'm different from everybody, but this is who I am, and I mean, this is my strength.
Some of Mosaic's recruits are hired by consulting giant Accenture. Khalid Lahraoui oversees Accenture's diversity efforts in France and the Benelux region. His own parents are Moroccan immigrants.
Diverse will generate more creativity, more innovative topics, and also we have to be at the same image that our clients and the society.
In one sign of changing times, Lahraoui says a new generation of French workers doesn't necessarily see diversity as something special, but as completely normal.
Lisa Bryant reporting. Ole, I hear that we have an update on the journalist being detained yesterday in Western Uganda. What is the latest so far?
That's right. We're referring to the hashtag Free Joy Doreen. She is a TV reporter who was detained yesterday, or actually on Sunday night, after she released a video and a Facebook post covering these clashes that happened at a tribal palace in the west of the country, where a reported 62 people were killed. She has since been released with three others on police bond. The police did charge them, though, with abetting terrorism, and they are required to report to the same police station on December 8th. And she wrote soon after on Twitter that, quote, "We are safe. We have been released on bond with charges of abetting terrorism. Thank you to each and every one of you for the incredible support and gratitude."
So now that she has been released, what are people saying about this release?
Well, the main discussion point on Twitter is, again, continuing with what we discussed yesterday, is that she was basically detained for doing her job as a journalist. And Accession Della wrote that Joy Doreen Bira is paying for being a journalist, and we should all stand up for such impunity. And another Twitter user, Opio Oloya, wrote that, "I am happy that Joy Doreen Bira has been released by authorities in Kasese. I urge them to review the case and drop charges against her."
Ole, I understand that you lived and reported from Uganda yourself. Is this normal for a journalist to be detained in such circumstances?
It's not normal, but it's not unheard of. It has happened in the past, and usually it happens when journalists are covering very tricky topics like this. This is a tribal issue, something about an officially unrecognized kingdom. And there were charges that they were looking to secede from Uganda, which obviously had government authorities concerned. And so this was a really sticky thing. Plus, you had the killings of up to 62 people. And we also have to think about the location of this, where this happened. This happened in the way west of the country, on the border to Congo. And this is an area where there are lots of Ugandan rebels and Congolese rebels who cross the border. And it's really an area that doesn't fall under complete control of the government authorities.
So it's actually an area where you don't actually find journalists.
No, normally, Kasese is a bigger city. There are journalists working there, but obviously this story pulled in a lot of other journalists. And I think it's really a sign of the fact that social media users feel a bit of freedom in Uganda, that they came so strongly to the support of a fellow journalist.
Oh, well, let's hope that journalists are safe in the country. Thanks, Ole. You're listening to Africa Link, and these are the stories that we have been following for you on this edition. South African President Jacob Zuma has survived a motion of no confidence at an extended meeting of the National Executive Council of the African National Congress. And World Health Organization has released new guidelines on HIV self-testing ahead of World AIDS Day. Remember, you can find more stories about Africa on our website. Just go to dw.com/Africa. From me, Eunice Njiro.
And from me, Ole Tangen Jr.
And from the entire Africa Link team, have a good evening.